QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz, offset of 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. Pretty, and we don't really have any announcements here, so we'll move on to the roster. And first on the roster is WB6CLZ, Mike.
Good evening, Tom and Annette. This is WB6CLZ in Placentia.
Hey, good evening there, Mike. And I just got your message, by the way. My phone had shut off. I don't know. Must have pushed the button or something. I don't know. But anyway, here we are. Okay, how about WB6CIN, Cindy?
Hello, Tom, and everyone on the net. Looking forward to the subject tonight.
As am I. How about KA6CIA, George? Okay, nothing heard. I think George said he was going to be tied up for a few weeks with guests or traveling or both. How about KE6RJ, Harry? Nothing heard. Is KE6QI Nancy out there? Got an early check-in here for AF6ZJ, Guy in Rosemond. And moving on to KI6SKN, Chris. And nothing heard. How about KJ68ZS, Mike?
Evening, Tom. The net. This is KJ6HCS. No traffic.
Okay, Mike, try to stay warm up there if you can. How about, and we'll give a courtesy check-in here for K6EKX. How about KJ6FIL, Mike?
Good evening, KJ6FIL.
Okay, Mike, Redlands, boy, I bet as it cools off, you're liking that down there, I'm sure, as everybody else is. How about KJ6KDL, Jim?
KJ6KDL here with KJ6KDK.
Okay, Jim. Glad to have you both check in here tonight. And sound a little hot on that mic. But anyway, just to let you know. How about W6GZI, Frank? Nothing heard. KI6IQA, Kelly. And nothing heard. How about K6GVL, Ron? Nothing heard. How about N6BOP? Ann, are you out there? Nothing heard. How about AD6PL, Harold?
Evening, AD6BL.
And Harold, glad to have you with us out there. How about K6LCS, Quint?
K6LCS, good evening, Tom, and the net.
All right, good deal. Glad to have you out there, Quint. And how about KJ6MFO? Jay, are you out there? And nothing heard. How about W6JLM, Judith? Probably wore out from the weekend, no doubt. And we'll do a W6KMM, but I think he's watching Jeopardy. Ken, are you out there? Nothing heard. How about KI-6OHN, John? Nothing heard. K-6YNW, Chris.
Howdy, K-6YNW.
Hey, Chris, glad to have you out there. And if W-6POO is out there listening on his way home, got you mentioned out here. Are you out there, or can you transmit back? Yeah, I think he's borderline out there hitting the repeater. Got you in here. Not a problem. How about KD6LAN, Bill? Ah, he must have wandered away from his radio. How about AE6CK, Victor?
Good evening, Tom and Zanette. This is Victor, Alpha Echo 6, Charlie Kilo.
All right, Victor. Glad to have you out there again this evening. How about KA6ROD, Rod? Yeah, nothing heard. Must be traveling. How about KB6LTY, Christy? Nothing heard. And let's see, we're going to skip down here to, let's see, wonder if he's out there. How about K6TUX, Gee? Yeah, nothing heard. NQ7RD, Rick and Corona, are you out there? All right, that is the list as I have it of the regulars here. Anybody else like to check in as a guest, please come back to KF6Q.
W6JET.
Glad to have you with us this evening. Anybody else out there? Anybody out there listening, feel free to check in there and jump in for questions, answers, whatever, as we go through this net, open net. Anyway, Mike, WB6CLZ, anything happening out there DX-wise?
Well, not right at this very second. I'm sure there is somewhere. But over the weekend, things were hot. Okay, well, let's get the conditions out of the way. Space weather right now is reporting a sunspot number of 85. And we have a solar flux index of 120-something, 9 solar flux units. So things are really good right now, actually. But 10 meters has gone away for the night. Most of the higher bands have gone away for the night. I just was playing around on 20, and there's a little bit of activity right now. But man, over the weekend, let me tell you, we had the California CUSO party. Basically, stations all over the world want to talk to stations in California. Boy, that's a different one, isn't it? And basically, the exchange is you give them your signal report and the county and the number of contacts that you have made, as is there your first or fourth or fifth contact. And that's how that works. Well, I've got a lot of working out this weekend with that all over the world. There was also the Oceana DX contest. We worked a lot of stations in Australia, New Zealand. We worked the DX expedition that's out at the old Christmas Island. Used to be called Christmas Island. Now it's something I can't pronounce. Another one not too far from Fiji, DX expedition. My gosh, all over the world. Brazil, Australia, Hawaii, Canada, New Zealand, you know, just really good conditions over the weekend, and all of that was done with 5 watts on 10 meters. Okay, well, that's all I got. I babbled for long enough. I'm sure there's somebody else out there that has some other reports on DX, because conditions are really good right now. Back to you, Tom. KF6Q and the Tech Tuesday Net. This is WB6CLZ.
And KF6Q here, Tech Tuesday. Well, Mike, 5 watts on 10 meters, that is awesome on those contacts. And just for any of our new listeners out there, what type of antenna? Were you using a dipole or Yagi, or what were you using there?
Most of those contacts, I was using an MA-5 mini beam by Cushcraft up about 40 feet. Basically, that is a Yagi. It's got traps. Not all of the elements are used on all bands, but it just so happens that on 10 meters, we use all three elements, so we get a little bit of a gain. And that's really what we were using. We weren't using the loop much. The vertical didn't get used much, so basically, it was that little mini beam up about 40 feet doing a good job for me.
That's fantastic, and you're getting a lot of contacts all over the place. Did you have to move that thing, as they are directional, but I think with three elements, you're pretty wide, and with the pattern there, did you just kind of aim it in any specific direction?
Basically, I was pointed east when I was working the California CUSO party, and when I was working the Oceana DX party, I had it down a little bit south and east, kind of pointed towards Australia and New Zealand. But yeah, we do swing the beam around quite a bit. I wish it was a little bit faster when we're playing around with that.
Okay, roger that. When you say 40 feet, is that up there on your top of your boom truck?
No, boom truck is reserved for work. Hi. No, actually, that is on an SM-40, and it's a steel pipe tower, similar to what Mark has, similar to what I have in Big Bear. It's just a basic crank up a couple of pieces of pipe, and it goes up to about 40 feet.
Okay, well, that's pretty awesome. And like I say, it's still always awesome doing it, what we call QRP, 5 watts, fantastic. Does anybody else out there also have anything to report on DXing on the HF bands? All right, nothing heard there, and I guess I should include the VHF bands too, the way the bands are opening up. Fantastic. And then, Mike, before we pass that up, as the sun is setting sooner, I guess that really opens up a lot more nighttime hours, and really as we get that gray line passes through us quicker, earlier, and appears later in the morning, so that kind of opens up our hours, is that correct?
On gray line propagation and a little bit more on trans-equatorial propagation, it does pretty well. I'm not a night owl, so I don't do a lot of the nighttime DXing on a little bit on the lower bands from 20 meters on down. But on the higher bands, it gives us a little bit more opportunity for DX a little bit later in the evening, a little bit later in the mornings.
Okay, Mike. Well, thanks for all that information, as you do give us every week. So. Well, next on the list here, we have our ham satellite report, K6LCS. What's new today? KF6Q.
Good evening, Tech Tuesday, Tom and Annette. Well, as far as the easy satellites are concerned, I hate to sound like a broken record regarding their accessibility. Wait a minute. I do have a recording. I have a recording for the second week in August. It's the same stuff you've heard the past 2 months from me. Stand by a second. Let me turn on the tape recorder. Hi, this is Clint, K6LCS, letting you know that Arisat 1, AO27, SO50, AO51, and the International Space Station for Packet are all up and running. For you HF folks, AO7, FO29, and BO52, up and running for you Morse code HF folks. Break. That's it. I mean, the last 2 months, it's just been wonderful for us. Now, the exception is FO-29, that we're getting scattered reports of not being able to hear its beacon on FO-29. But for UHF folks, AO-7 and VO-52 are up and running for you. So upcoming events, PacificCon is coming up October 14th through 16th in Santa Clara. I'll be making my presentation twice on Saturday. That's October 14th through 16th. Down the Hill at the San Gorgonio Amateur Radio Club, October 27th, will be a satellite show, a satellite presentation. And then for Anaheim Races on November 1. Break for a sec. The annual AMSAT Symposium is coming to the West Coast. It'll be in the beautiful Wyndham Hotel in San Jose, November 4 through November 6, a weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, November 4 through November 6. Special rates for the Wyndham are $79 a night for the symposium. Go to amsat.org for more information on the annual symposium. If you want to rub shoulders, rub elbows with about 150, 160 other satellite geeks, that's the place to be. I do have a question of the week tonight. Break for a sec. Tonight's question of the week comes from a visitor to my website, the website of worksat.com, work-sat.com. The question is, when we're talking about satellites, what is eclipse rate? An excellent question, and one that I didn't know what it was when I first hit it. But eclipse is when the satellite has entered the shadow of the Earth. No big deal, except for when you're working with rechargeable batteries and solar cells. So when the orbiting satellite enters into the shadow of the Earth every rotation, and a ratio of shadow duration to one rotating period is called an eclipse ratio. Fortunately, our FM birds, when they're perpendicular toward the sun and have these polar orbits, eclipse ratio is closer to zero. So that's a great question on worksat.com. Last break. As far as AO-51's operations, after much trial and error, we have a sweet spot where we can keep it operational during its short eclipse time. Cell 3 is dead short. Cell 2 now goes to about 0 volts in eclipse. It is still pumping out almost 900 milliwatts for us on the output coming down. Even with a dead battery and one battery that you and I wouldn't have in our shacks. But by the end of the year, eclipses are going to be closer to 30 minutes in length. So please, get on AO-51 while it's still available. Uplink is still 145.88, 145.88. No tone required. And a downlink, 435.15, 435.15. Almost 900 milliwatts coming down for us on a very crippled bird that's up there longer than its expected life expectancy. Tech Tuesday Tom, that's all I've got. K6LCS.
Well, thanks for the information there, Clint. Appreciate that. And, one thing that was kind of interesting, where you're talking about eclipse of the behind the shadow of the Earth, not this last field day, but the one prior in 2010, did work or was trying to work and landed a contact with the FM birds on field day. One thing which I really never had happen, and it was just, I guess, coincidental, you get used to tracking the satellite. You know, you're not looking at the antenna. You're kind of listening to what's coming across the HT. You're focused on the contacts. You're focused on that. And your arm, pretty much, other than getting very tired and lopsided as it gets very strong, or not, you follow the satellite path if you kind of have a general sense of where it's going, not looking at it. And all of a sudden, the signal dropped. Had a huge amount of static, didn't quite understand what was going on, looked up, and, oh, guess what? I was looking into the sun. Ever have that happen, Clint?
Wow, so the Earth station, the satellite, and the sun were all on the same line. That's interesting. And I bet you the gentleman who just gave the propagation and HF report might have an answer for that, because I don't. Now I can imagine that occurring. I've heard SO50 drop out in mid conversation, but I wonder if there's an atmospheric or an answer for that maybe your HF person might know for us. Maybe these are 2 meter 440 birds. That'd be a great. That's a great question.
Yeah, so I'll call on Mike in just a minute, because he was actually doing my logging for me. And I think he was there with me, actually, when that happened. But I think it's just the noise that you get from the sun And when all, you know, when it was, the satellite was in line, tracking right across the path, of course, we heard a lot of noise and the signal dropped. I'm not sure if it was AO, I was trying to work AO-27 and SO-50 and AO-51, multiple different birds. A lot of them real close to each other in the pass is pretty neat. But we had one, and it just really didn't quite focus on where I'm aiming my arm. I know I'm going to travel this path. Got that pretty much programmed into my mind. And then, of course, when we had basically went it right across and were pointing straight at the sun, it dropped out. But, of course, as soon as we got away from the sun, it was back. Mike, CLZ, I think you were with me when that happened. And there was a lot of noise, I believe, from the sun. Is that correct?
Yeah, Tom, especially when we're getting into periods of high activity. I know they've been having a lot of noise reported around the 15-meter band, around 21, the low end of 21 megahertz. That's been pretty well documented by amateur astronomers and such using radio telescopes. But, yeah, not so much in the VHF range, but I know the sun is broad spectrum, and I'm sure that's probably what it was. It was just maybe a notch or a frequency or, you know, in the VHF range that just took that out. We get that on 75 meters all the time in the morning when we're doing the morning rag chew for the BBARC here on 75 meters.
Yeah, I know. The sun itself, of course, because of particles and ionization, can really play havoc with some of the bands once it actually gets above the horizon. So that's possibly one of the reasons we got a lot of particles coming from that guy. Well, anyway, one thing that it's that time of year again. We're getting into the fall season. Winter is right upon us. In fact, for up here in Big Bear, winter is like a day away. We got a lot of stuff happening, and we've all enjoyed working our radios all through the summer. Actually, if you're in some of the lower areas where it gets pretty hot, this is not an issue. But as we get into the wet season, time to kind of check out there doesn't hurt. Take a Saturday, get out there, check your coax connections. You know, make sure that weatherproofing you put on there is not fried or worn out. Kind of check your cables a little bit, see if they're all in good shape. You don't want to have the radio drop out right in the middle of a rainstorm, which can happen. We're kind of getting away from some of the thunderstorms, still a little bit out there, but now we're getting towards the winter weather, so especially if you're up here in Big Bear. Break for a second. As we get into the snow season, good time to check. Make sure that you're not going to do a snow buildup on that antenna you put up last summer. Hey, guess what? There wasn't any snow then, but now there is. How come my radio doesn't work? A lot of little things there. Always be thinking about that. I know one of our people up here on the hill that moved off, I think, about a year ago, had the same issue with a J-pole. Very simple antenna, but got a little moisture in there, and it will fool you. Break for a second. Depending on the length of your coax and the type of problem, I think he had, what he had with the problem with his J-pole. But anyway, you can have an SWR meter. You can show that you're pumping power out. You can show that your SWR is low because there's no power coming back, and that's because all the power is going through that defect out there and sucking it up. So there is no reflected power, so SWR looks, boy, this is good. Nobody can hear me, though, and you're putting out power. Well, nobody can hear me, though. Well, trust me, that is very, very possible. So sometimes those meters don't tell the true story. Break for a second. So anyway, check out what you got, and then you give it a visual inspection. Like I say, now's the time to do it. Actually, if you're up here in Big Bear, it would have been better a couple days ago. But anyway, check out your coax, do a few things like that. But if you don't have a chance to do that, and something like that pops up, that should be the first place you check. Mike, ever had any experiences with bad coax or connections or had anything mess you up like that?
Oh, yeah, I'm jumping up and down here in my seat saying, Tom, give me a break. Yes, I have, as a matter of fact. The mini beam that I was just talking about on the DX report, I was not having for a long time, I haven't had good luck with that. I just haven't been using it. And couldn't figure it out. I put it on the antenna analyzer through the switch that I used to switch from my beam to my vertical. So in other words, it wasn't going right to the coax going out there. It was going to through the switch. Well, son of a gun, the other day I wanted to switch around and use my antenna switch since I've had since about 1975. And I wanted it to play around, stick another antenna in there, just play around with it, see how it's doing. And son of a gun, if it wasn't all corroded, I'm looking at the thing right now, and it looks like somebody, you know, had put soap or something on it. It's just really bad. So moisture obviously has gotten down in there. May have been a bad connection also, or a combination. But yeah, it just happened to me, gosh, a month ago. And now that antenna is working superb. It's working like it's supposed to, and I'm having fun with it. So yeah, there's a case, an actual case history right there. Back to you, Tom. This is WB6CLZ.
Well, good point there, Mike. You know, and I think we experienced this out there at Field Day this last year setting up, and I think a lot of people have probably experienced this. If you bought a chunk of coax or had a piece of coax connectors in both ends, and all of a sudden the thing just goes bad. A lot of times, not every time, a lot of times that bad will be basically just at the coax ends within the first 6 inches. There is a way to check it out, especially if you know if the thing is bad. I would say probably the best thing would be just to, if you have an analyzer, that's almost mandatory in this, but not the only way. If you had an analyzer, you can literally cut the coax off, the end off, and start doing some tests on that, and you'll find that a lot of times you get corrosion in that first few inches. So losing about 6 inches off of the weathered end, the internal end usually isn't too bad. That side out there by the antenna, about 6 inches off of that. And if you don't know which end it was, cut it off of both ends. You may lose a connector, or unless you're good at unsoldering, you may save 100 foot of coax may turn into 99 feet. Mike, have you had any experience with the bad coax stuff?
Actually, the coax still is measuring good. It's the connectors that I've had a lot of trouble with. I've been, knock on wood, knock, knock, knock. I've been pretty lucky with coax. The interesting thing is, well, like I said, the antenna analyzer did not show that, and it's basically, I think, because I was going through the switch, and not actually, I would have seen it visually had I gone to the coax itself.
Yeah, and if you're using the infamous MFJ analyzer of whatever model and make, you've got to be kind of careful. Read the instructions on those, and you can come up with some pretty good tests. They do a lot more than analyzing antennas. They're really, really good for checking coax length. If you got 50 foot of coax, it's showing up that this coax is like 300 feet long. You have a problem. There's definitely something wrong there. You know, and you got to be careful, too. I mean, if you have this thing hooked up to an antenna, disconnected from that antenna. I had a gentleman up here, had it hooked up to his J-pole, and unfortunately, what happens is that J-pole antenna, it's live, not Memorex, and was picking up our local repeater, getting a lot of input, and the signals coming in from that totally messing up the analyzer, didn't know what it was looking at. So, yeah, you got to make sure you disconnect it from the antenna. At least if you're going to be checking the coax. Now, if you're going to be measuring the antenna, checking the antenna itself, yeah, now that's a different story. So, well, Mike, as an electrician or electrical type guy, what's that magical rubber tape that we can use to help weatherproof this stuff?
I love that stuff. Yeah, it's rubber tape, and it's used basically for you sealing high-voltage electrical connections or DC connectors or something like that. Yeah, it's really cool. It's rubber on a roll, and you just kind of wrap it around the connection and pull it tight, and it seals really, really good. Then you finish taping that sucker up with some Scotch 33 Plus is the best kind, electrical tape. That kind of seals it better, and should not have much leakage in that turkey.
Okay, Roger that. I mean, I've heard of people using silicone in there, and sometimes that gets to be a mess if you ever have to disconnect it. as it sets up. But I think I've undone some of those rubberized tape ones, and they really come apart pretty easily. Actually, you can just take a good sharp Xacto knife or a razor knife of any sort, being careful, of course, and just slice through that puppy and peel the whole thing off like an eggshell. But we can get that rubberized tape. Is that something that, like, Home Depot, Lowe's, or Riffenberg's up here would have?
I think definitely Riffenberg would have it, Butcher Block would have it, the new DIY would have it, and if they don't, definitely Geiger's would over there by the hospital.
Okay, roger that, because I think that is probably one of the things we overlook, especially, like I said, things get wet outside. And one thing up here in Big Bear, or if you're in an area where you get snow or ice, and freezing, we did have an issue. Never did really figure out what that was. We went up to check out the repeater. It was perfectly fine here, oh my gosh, about a year ago. As snow melts, of course, it turns into water, and then as your temperatures start dropping at night, it refreezes. And with just a little water itself, true pure water itself, is supposed to be an insulator. I believe that, but I have never tested that. But anyway, pure water supposedly is an insulator until it becomes ionized, which takes just very little of anything to do that. So any kind of debris or any kind of anything, next thing you know, water gets in there, and let me reset. And it gets down into those little crevices that weren't waterproofed. Next thing you know, you have a new antenna called water. Not good. So, anyway, that is one thing. Mike, is there anything else you could probably recommend? I'm scratching my head here on waterproofing our connections outside. Anything that crosses your head?
You know, Tom, that's probably the best way to do it. I've heard of silicone, and sometimes they give you it's not a silicone glue, it's a little silicone packet in the when you buy your antennas, and that kind of seals it off. But I'm kind of old fashioned. I like the rubber tape and the Scotch 33 Plus. To me, that's always served the purpose. And even though I had one that only lasted 35 years or so, I think it still works out pretty well.
Yeah, and now, Mike, I think one other thing out there is, and this is for the definitely ambitious ham, checking out your different Yagis or antennas you have, especially if you have Yagis. I mean, a J-pole is a J-pole. But if you have a Yagi out there of some sort, check out the elements to the main boom. Kind of check that out. Just about all of them except for the driven element is usually shorted to the boom. Sometimes the driven element is too. If it's a gamma match or a T match, it'll also be shorted. And those connections over time, almost all of our antennas are made out of aluminum. And over time, it can get some corrosion in there. Now, this is probably not something you have to do every year. But Mike, is there a general cleaner? I think you had something at one time, or you have knowledge of that, something to clean that up, or do we have to just take it apart and sand it or polish it? What's a good way to do that?
One backtrack just a little bit, especially on Yagis. If it's a trap vertical or a trap beam or something where it's got traps, that's definitely a bad area that you need to pay attention to every 10 years or so. But I don't really know a good way to clean that. To be honest with you, I had a really nice TH3 that was starting to get corroded. It's a tri-band beam. And at the time, I didn't know how to do it, so I chopped it up and took it to the scrapyard and bought a new one. But yeah, there are ways to clean that up, and I've heard of people buffing them. Tom, I know that you use a wire brush, and I know there are preparations that can be used to clean that up. Now, after you get it back together, you can always use a Noalox, which is, Never Sees or one of those. It's an aluminum antioxidant, but clean it up, I'm not really sure the best way. I think you had pretty good luck with the way you did it. Why don't you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I picked up a tri-bander three-element Yagi for 10, 15, and 20, And for those not in the know of that, that is basically a pretty big antenna. Boom's about 12 feet long, and the elements are basically about 12 feet long. You know, of course, they're not exactly that. They're a little bit shorter. Traps to get all three beams, like all three bands like that. The one main thing you have to watch if you're going to disassemble something like that, which is what I did, you have to pay attention to the lengths and the positions of these items, like where the traps are and which element is which, the length of the element. All those lengths are critical. And unless you want to completely have to retune your antenna, which would be not a very fun thing to do, of course, it's always a good thing to check if you're into that. But basically, that's one thing you have to watch. Is watch, write down on a piece of paper that you're not going to lose all these dimensions. We reset. As a lot of these bigger Yagis, or even with the traps, all of them have adjustments, and so you want to make sure that thing goes back together. Really, I'm going to say like number 200 or 300 sandpaper, steel wool. Works fine if you got some kind of a buffing fine wire brush. That works quicker. A lot of different things you can do. It all depends what you have. But if all you have is a piece of fine sandpaper, and that's going to take you a little longer. But the main thing is those connections, and then, of course, it's just habit. You're going to have to shiny up the whole thing. Right, Mike?
We definitely like it shiny, and we want it as good as new. Yeah, they seem to work better when they shine, don't they, Tom?
Roger that. Yeah, I mean, one thing is make the electrical connections or the RF connections good, and then make it pretty so it looks all shiny up there in the sky. But unless it's incognito and going to be a stealth antenna, and of course, then you want to paint it sky blue or something. But anyway, that's a good deal, and that works out pretty good. Now, we're going to get into some of the little Yagis that we use for satellite work, cross beams and whatnot. Really neat antennas. Quint uses them a lot. I have one that I use. There again, it's pretty obvious. Those are usually kept indoors and when they're not in use. But you got to make sure all your connections are tight and clean, all that. One of the things is like all the different little connections where you hook up stuff, each one in line. Let me reset. Mike, like you said, you had your antenna switch inside. That would be one thing that you would not think about. We're always thinking, well, the outside's weathering and it's going to probably hit all the different storms are going to work at it every year after year. Anything in line. You might have a connector halfway down, or maybe you've got two pieces of 100 foot with a barrel connector. Check all those and weatherproof all of those if you can. Sometimes you might have to cut that weatherproofing off and inspect it and redo it. Don't have to do that every year. But Mike, what would you say about every maybe 2 or 3 years for something like that?
Tom, I think that probably would be ideal situation, and I'm not sure of the maintenance frequency on something like that, but that would probably be ideal in Big Bear, definitely, because, we do get the extreme weathers up there down here in the lowlands where it's kind of mellow, probably every 5 years or so. But like I say, that would probably be optimum. I don't know if that's reality.
Now, probably one area, and I don't know this for a fact, I just know what I salvaged from down in the Long Beach area. You get closer to salt water, of course. We all know salt water corrodes everything. Corrodes salt water. But anyway, you get closer to the ocean or anything like that, probably going to have a maintenance cycle of, I'd say, if you want to do it right, once a year. But not that you can't get away with it. You'll just have that signal slowly slip. you're like, well, I used to talk down there to Argentina, and now I don't. Well, everything's good. You're losing it in those connections. So it would just be something that creeps up on you. You can always blame it on propagation. We do. but one thing you get to check out there. Is there anybody out there with any questions or suggestions or anything to add to this? Please come back to KF6Q.
KJ6RUA.
YNW.
All right, we'll take Ray first, KJ6RAY. Go ahead, Ray.
Good evening, Tom. And Annette, yes, you were talking about cleaning the antennas. What I use is, the cleaner where you use to clean your aluminum alloy wheels. That's what I use, and it's very effective.
Oh, that's good. That's a good item there. Boy, I wish I had pictures of this one I got from Long Beach. Corrosion was so bad that I literally did have to use abrasive. But, if you're not to that point and you're just going to polish that thing up and clean it up. And I think that all that is whoever had this antenna I inherited or actually went up there to take down it and inherit it. They had never, I think it had never been down since it was put up in the air. So, and that happens a lot. But good point there, Ray. Appreciate that. YNW, Chris, go ahead.
Yes, I can't remember who it was at the San Diego convention. Might have been Wayne, N6NB. Anyway, he got to a nice high elevation and said, DX is going to be really here. I think it was 8,000 feet. But in winter, the ice took all of his antennas down. He tried it two winters. The ice took everything down. I don't know if that's I don't know if you guys have the problem there. But he had an adventure. K6YNW.
Well, I got to tell you from experience, and this is going back a couple of winters ago, and we're getting close to about 2 years of that, the very, very deep, wet snow. I think we had close, as an average, around 5 feet of snow in that one storm. And power line, because the snow was so wet, I mean, it would hit and it would freeze and it would hit and freeze. I had my wire dipole, my 80 meter, basically was pretty taut, but basically you had, I'm surprised it didn't break loose. Of course, a lot of power lines did. So I think that's one issue right there, where even if you have just a wire antenna, a wire dipole, not even, say, an element beam or Yagi up there, you get enough buildup with the right storm, you're going to have, you possibly could have problems. And this is one thing to think about, too, when you're putting stuff up in the air. Let me reset. If you're in an area like that, like we are up here, got to think a little bit. If you want to have a quad antenna up there, quads are nice, pretty neat. Anything you have up there, once it gets this ice on there, it becomes a much bigger wind load. And if you have a rotator, which you probably do because you're going to spin that puppy around, that extra wind load grabs at more torque. And one thing to think about, it never hurts to have a heavier duty rotator, because once that thing breaks, that thing's just going to spin all over the place. It's going to be pretty much worthless until you pull the thing back down. Unfortunately, rotators, especially the good ones, are expensive, but look on eBay, I would suggest, and anything else like that. Anybody else out there, any suggestions or questions, please come back. KF6Q.
Hi, QA.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just to digress back to the rubber tape for anybody that's never dealt with it before, as you're wrapping it, you've got to stretch it. If you don't stretch it, it doesn't stick. Learn that one the hard way. KI6IQA.
Very good point there. I guess Mike would probably testify to that. And I guess if you're used to wrapping things tight and stretching it and pulling on it, it would be an automatic. But, yeah, very good point. Thanks, Kelly. Appreciate that. Anybody else out there, any questions or comments, please come back. KF6Q on antenna maintenance. I guess you just call it maintenance era of going into winter. All right, well, I think we've covered a couple things there, and this really is the time of year. We try to cover grounding and lightning issues at that time of year. We'll probably get into more on Yagi's start going back into some of the antenna theory, just really light theory, as we're coming up into the winter months. Appreciate everybody being out there. Mike, anything to add in closing?
Oh, no, Tom, but great subject, you know, near and dear to my heart. So, yeah, fantastic. Good good Tech Tuesday tonight. Okay, everybody have a good evening. WB6CLZ.
Well, Mike, when we have actually an undecided night like that, I have actually this huge wall with, I cut out all these different things out of one of the QST magazines, and I throw a dart, and where the dart hits, that's what we do. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding. Anybody else out there, anything else to add or any final questions? Please come back. KF6Q. All right. Well, I want to thank everybody out there who's been there this evening. And, yeah, this is all something that, like I said, we don't want to do it, but it's something that y'all guarantee you that's the worst time in the world out there with a storm. You're going to say, oh, man. My radio doesn't work. Well, hopefully you don't get to that point. Check it out there next sunny day we got. Just make sure it's all ready for winter. So, all righty. Well, QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, Net Control for Tech Tuesday. And we're closing the net this evening at 1900 hours, 46 minutes. I do appreciate everybody being out there and participating. And, of course, next week we'll have another interesting topic. And carry on as we always do. Mike, thank you very much for co-host. And everybody out there, stay safe. Be careful with the storms coming up. And stay dry. This is KF6Q, returning the repeater to normal use.